The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Pleasant good afternoon. Welcome. It is the middle of the week, and we are here for the next couple of hours, and we hope you'll jump on board and ride with us. A lot happening this week as we get ready for another college football weekend in a few days. Let's start with some headlines and some ugliness coming out of Big Orange Country. That's Jeremy Pruitt. Just when you think we have heard the last of him, his attorney is doing a lot of threatening, setting an October 29th deadline for a settlement by Tennessee. Tennessee does not look like they want to settle this case. Philip Fulmer, remember him? He said today in a statement, the days I interviewed each candidate for the head football position at the University of Tennessee, including Jeremy Pruitt, I emphasized that you did not have to cheat to win at the university, and the cheating would not be tolerated. Listen to this quote. Jeremy has no one to blame but himself for his firing from UT. He had a great opportunity at a great university, and he simply screwed it up. That's strong language. I mean, well, first of all, just listening to an athletic director, a former athletic director, in really what's tantamount to a legal document, a legal statement, saying the word screwed it up. I don't think they teach that at Harvard Law School. Anyway, let's get. But Tennessee does play Alabama this weekend, and the tail of the tape, two pretty good offenses. Who would have thought we would have had two of the better offenses in the SEC playing this weekend? Tennessee third, fourth, tied for second. Alabama looks pretty good. Let's talk about some impressive stats. Saban 14-0 versus UT. Tom Brady 32-3 versus the Bills in his career. Ohio State 8-0 versus Michigan since 2012. Oklahoma as many Big 12 championships since 2016 as Big 12 losses. I frankly think Ohio State 8-0 is pretty unbelievable considering they hired a coach to beat Ohio State. Tennessee has been in the wasteland for a while. The Magnolia Bowl, that's where we will be Friday. LSU and Ole Miss, it's always a great rivalry. LSU has won five straight in the series, all under Coach O. Yes, you do know where Coach O used to be at Ole Miss. So, I mean, this is an intriguing game. We'll find out whether last week was just an aberration, whether that was about Florida, or are these players finally going to stand up for their embattled and almost departed coach. That's game Saturday afternoon at Vaught-Hemingway. Big show on tap for today. Brandon Marcello on some thoughts on his former beat. He used to cover Auburn. Shea Ralph, new coach of women's ball at Vanderbilt. And what about John Calipari? Eager to hear what Coach Cal has to say. He's always entertaining. Out of pocket. We'll have a segment with Alyssa Andrea and the venerable Cecil Hurt, the longtime sports editor who has watched the Tennessee-Alabama rivalry go from the most storied in the SEC to the most bitter to almost obsolete. We'll see if it's got a resurgence underway this Saturday in Tuscaloosa. Your phone calls as well. At 855-242-7285, we begin with Wayne, who is in Florida. Hello, Wayne.
Hey, sir. Wayne Smith from the great state of Florida. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Great to hear from you.
Good. Hey, sir, just let me say three real rings, and then I'll ask my question.
Anthony Richardson was in the first few weeks of the season, got hurt. We never saw him against Alabama. I almost feel like that.
Wayne, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Okay.
The first thing, recruiting. Dan, quit looking at the stars in the skies. Go with what 4 and 5 stars are. We're losing recruits. Dan, start Richardson. Quit trying to make Jones something he is not.
Full-time action in that game almost leads him on a comeback.
And yeah, for some reason, it seems like we're hearing another show. I mean, this guy obviously is listening to another show while he's watching us. We get his feeling, though. And I spoke to somebody down there today, and it is all about Anthony Richardson. The Gator fans are essentially saying to Dan Mullen, start Anthony Richardson or else. Let's continue with more phone calls. And Terry is in Georgia. You're on the air. Hello, Terry.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
Checking in with you. Hey, a couple weeks ago after, I forget which Florida loss, the Florida fans were comparing Mullen to Mark Richt, which I think is grossly inappropriate. I mean, Mark Richt, first of all, won two SEC championships. Mark Richt has an amazing character. And to make that comparison, I just thought was totally classless. But, you know, what do you expect from Florida fans? But, Paul, I think we're back to Georgia and Alabama being number one and number two. What do you think?
Yeah, I think if you're being objective, the two best teams in the country right now are Georgia and Alabama.
So, you know, that's kind of what we thought would happen. And here we are in the middle of the season. And I expect the championship game to be incredible. And I'm looking forward to the second great half of college football. And thanks again for being on point for everybody. And thanks again for all you do.
Thank you very, very much. Ed is up next in Georgia. Hello, Ed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Feinbaum. How are you doing?
I am well. Thank you very much.
Good deal. Good deal. Look, I'm not going to take a whole lot of your time, but this weekend Ole Miss plays LSU, and I'm glad they're playing them in Mississippi and not in LSU, because 50 years ago, this year, LSU was playing Ole Miss down there, and 10 seconds left in the game, LSU has the ball on the Ole Miss 10-yard line. They need a touchdown to win the game. So, first down, Burt Jones rolls out, can't find anybody open, throws the ball out of bounds. Second down, the same thing happens. So, it's third down, there's 4 seconds left in the game. He rolls out, can't find anybody open, throws the ball out of bounds. There's no time left on the clock. Now, I think there's no time left on the clock. The horn's already gone off, wouldn't you think?
Right.
Okay, so one of the officials says he hadn't heard the horn go off. So they give LSU one extra play, and they win the game on that extra play, but they never should have been given that extra play because time is out at 0-0-0, at least on the earth that I live on. And to give them an extra play just wasn't right, you know, so I'm glad it's being held this year at Ole Miss, and maybe we got a chance to win, because with officiating like that, we don't have a chance. I don't understand the reasoning behind the official's account of there has to be time left on the clock because he hadn't heard the horn go off. The guy that was supposed to...
No, Ed, we're still talking about the game in 1971, is that right?
Yes, sir, I'm okay. Afraid so. Yeah. I don't feel bad about it until the weekend the LSU plays Ole Miss. But for years after that game, and I hate to tell you, I mean, hell, I hope that the bus they were on would crash or the plane they were on would crash. I hated them until 1985, and then I was living in Memphis, and I had a whole bunch of Memphis State friends that were really pulling hard for Memphis State. Memphis State was playing LSU, and LSU beat them. Ricky Blanton was the center back then for LSU. And, so I could rah-rah all my friends in Memphis about their Tigers getting beat. That's when I started to kind of feel a little bit for LSU. If they're playing, you know, Michigan in a bowl game, I'm pulling for LSU. But I wouldn't have been 40 years ago, I'm going to tell you.
Ed, thanks. Don't remember that game, but I'm certainly going to look it up this weekend in Oxford. We're back. More to come. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And we welcome all of you back. Let's continue with more phone calls. And Red Dog is up next.
Hey, Paul, I want to apologize for being so cranky with you yesterday. I shouldn't have been so hard on you and so mad that, you know, sometimes when you hadn't won a national championship in 40 years, it just happens, Paul, you know? But I want to thank you for voting for us number one this week. Didn't you vote for the Dogs number one?
I don't vote, but I think they should be number one.
I got you. Hey, and just a suggestion. I know you don't do politics on your show. But I think it would be cool, because Herschel's running for Senate, if you could get an interview with him. Not political views, just to see what inspired him to do it. I know you know Herschel, and I think it'd be a cool interview. Go Dogs, Paul.
David is up next. Good afternoon, David. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Doing great. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
I just a couple of scenarios I want to run by you here. If Bama finishes, if we run the table and lose to Georgia by a touchdown or less in the SEC championship game, or we lose before then and beat them in the SEC championship game, is a two-loss Alabama not better than a zero-loss Cincinnati?
Well, the second part of your scenario is the most interesting. If Alabama loses to Georgia, then they're not getting in. There's no way a two-loss non-SEC champion is going to get in. But let's say they lost to Auburn the week before by a last second. Let's just have just to make a scenario up, a 109-yard field goal return, okay?
Kick six, right? I got you.
and then beat Georgia. Then the committee's got a real problem, because you know they have a two-loss team that's lost on the road at Auburn and then on the road at A&M, but they've also beaten the best team in the country by far in a title game. So I think that's really an interesting scenario right there.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it, Paul. Hey, I won a book. I won the Bama Dynasty book this morning on Jocks, and I sure would like to get you to sign it sometime.
Well, David, it would be my pleasure. I can't wait to see you. Thanks so much. Shannon is up next. Hello, Shannon.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Shannon, we're doing great.
Man, what a crazy weekend of college football it was last week. And it just occurred to me, the number two team in the nation got beat last weekend at home on homecoming. And I don't even think it's been discussed on your show, has it?
No.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Paul, I'm going to say something I thought I'd never say to you, and that was that I really enjoyed Buddy Martin's interview yesterday. I think he was transparent, and he was honest, and he was straightforward about the things that are going on at Florida. I will disagree with one thing he said. He said a lot of the shortcomings fall on Mullen's shoulders. I think as the head coach, they all fall on Mullen's shoulders because at the end of the day, he's the one responsible for that program. But did I hear him say yesterday that the HBC thinks that Anthony Richardson could be a Heisman-winning quarterback?
Yes.
Paul, if that's the case, why is Dan Mullen being forced by alumni and boosters to start Anthony Richardson or else?
I don't know, but that's what's going on down there. And it's really going to be interesting to see what Dan Mullen wants to do because I had somebody tell me in Gainesville this afternoon that I alluded to it earlier, and I'm sure you heard me, and the line was, he better start Anthony Richardson or else. I'm not sure what or else means, as if fans are going to rise up with their pitchforks, but that is the mess I think Dan Mullen has gotten into, at least perceptively.
I think the biggest detriment that Dan Mullen's had at Florida has been his inability to put the right quarterback on the field. You and I have talked in the past about the Felipe Franks, oh, yeah, University of Kentucky game, the injury that forced Kyle Trask on the field. And I'm just curious why it's taken so long for him to pull the trigger on Richardson, even this weekend at LSU. You know, Emory threw two interceptions out of the four that were thrown before he finally put Anthony Richardson in the game. So it strikes me as odd. As much flack as Kirby took over the Fields from situation, it seems like there'd be a little bit more irateness, I guess is the word.
Well, but Shannon, you know what's going on here. It's festering, and it's going to take a little bit of a hiatus this week, but next week is Georgia week. And if Georgia goes down to Jacksonville and does what they've done pretty much to everybody else, the hue and cry will be outrageous. Am I wrong to still be puzzled over Ed, who was a genuinely nice man a few minutes ago, who is still upset about the 1971 Ole Miss LSU game and said some of the things that he did about a bad call? Man, that was really, I don't know why I let that one get away from me without thinking about it, but that was really interesting. Ron is in Mississippi. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Mr. Powell, first time caller.
Thank you.
And Ole Miss Rebel.
Howdy, toddy.
I was wanting to know if you thought LSU had a chance of getting Lane Kiffin away from us, and how you think this weekend's going to go?
Well, I am concerned about Matt Corral because he is doing it by himself, and as a result of having to do it by himself, he got pretty banged up, and I really don't know what his health is. We'll talk to Lane Kiffin Friday on our program for a late update. That's the X factor in the game. I'm curious about what the mindset will be of LSU. I think it will be a little different playing on the road than it was at home last weekend. Gene is in Tennessee. You're on the air. Hello, Gene.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a brief comment. I loved Legend's statement, "I'm a Tennessee ball." And I loved what he had to say about Tennessee. And I just wanted to let him know he had a friend from Tennessee. And I'd like to shake his hand one day if I could. And a little side note, I know you know who Jason Witten is.
Sure.
Just wanted to let you know I played football the same high school he did 50 years ago.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
Well, that is He's an amazing football player. Had a chance to talk to him a couple years ago, and he's as good as there's ever
been.
We're
very proud of him. Very proud of him.
Well, Gene, you're still a young man if you played 50 years ago.
Yeah, I'm almost 70 years old.
Well, you sound great. Well, you keep it up. Thanks for the call. Let's talk to David, who is up next. Good afternoon, David.
How's it going?
We're doing great.
I called you, this is my second time ever calling the show. I called you before the season started, and I predicted Ole Miss and Tennessee in the SEC championship game. I don't know if you remember me calling you before the season ever started about that.
Yeah, I do remember that one.
I still believe that's possible if Tennessee wins out and Ole Miss wins out. Nobody talks about that, you know, because the up-tempo offense, Alabama might struggle a little bit with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, not really, but so you're suggesting to that, that Tennessee
no,
can go on the road
not
and,
be too much.
And beat Alabama and also beat Georgia at home.
Oh, yeah.
David, listen, I don't know. Let's see, you live in Georgia?
Yep. Yeah.
So you're suggesting that, that Tennessee would beat Alabama, Kentucky, and Georgia.
Yeah, Kentucky's a no doubter. They're not worth. Kentucky ain't that good anyway.
Do you, David? Do you live any near any chemical plants by any chance?
No. Okay. I sure don't.
I'm gonna eliminate that from the possible reason that you obviously have a young kid around, right?
Yeah, I got two of them.
Okay, so would it be fair to say you haven't slept in a while?
Yeah, I work a lot. Yeah, I don't sleep a lot.
Okay, well, I'm going to let you off the hook of the fact that you are sleepless in Georgia. Hey, thanks for the call. We are coming back. Brandon Marcello, who is not sleepless at all, he's one of the top sports commentators in the country, and he'll join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
And we welcome you back. It's always great to have Brandon Marcello on, who has such a great insight on so many college football stories and as a national football columnist and writer. Brandon, good to see you. And let's start with the story of the week. Not a surprise. O is gone. Who do you hear could be taking his place?
Well, you're hearing a lot of big names right now, but I think we're kind of getting lost in that when we really shouldn't. To me, the top guy that you should be calling number one and doing your research on, if they haven't already, is Billy Napier in Louisiana. I mean, the guy is an incredible recruiter, an incredible head coach, has had the top recruiting class the last 3 years in the Sun Belt, is a Saban protege, but is different in the sense that he's adapted what Saban does, especially with support staffers and hiring a lot of guys, but also in that recruiting approach and making it work at a place like Louisiana. Why is that a big thing to me? Well, because a lot of coaches have tried to do that on a smaller level, and they've been very unsuccessful in doing that. They've almost like kind of fallen underneath their own weight in trying to do it because they don't have the cash to be able to hire all those support staffers. So they're having to go out and try to get even student assistants and everything to kind of do what a full-time employee should do. But instead, he's made it work there at Louisiana and has done a fantastic job with that program. And I think that you just drive an hour outside of Baton Rouge, go to your West, go hire him, go talk to him, at least go talk to him. This idea that there's an infatuation with, we got to go get a big name, we got to go get James Franklin, you know, why? We got to go get Chris Peterson. Why? He's never coached in the SEC. He's never coached in the South. Why do you need to do that? Go get the right fit for your program. And the right fit to me and for people I talk to in the industry, that guy is Billy Napier. It's not James Franklin. It's not Chris Peterson.
Brandon, is it possible that Napier has been in their sights for a long time? Because his name has come up for several other jobs, and he has stayed put.
I mean, he's a guy that if he's going to leave Louisiana, I know that sounds crazy to some people. It's like, why wouldn't you want to leave Louisiana? He's got to kind of leave it for a perfect situation. You know, listen, he was in the running at Tennessee, South Carolina, Arkansas, Mississippi State over these last 2 to 3 years. He did not leave. He stayed put. because he wants to go in and not be compromised. What's that mean? He doesn't want to go into a situation where they're going to go, we're going to give you less than what Nick Saban gets at Alabama as far as support, both financially and with the administration. He didn't quite see that at a place like a Tennessee or South Carolina or Arkansas or Mississippi State. And those were almost kind of non-starters from the get-go. So he didn't pursue them. His agent didn't go out there and plant the seeds out there and hoping it would sprout up into the media and maybe get his name a lot of push. But this situation at LSU, I don't think he needs to do that either because he knows what's possible there. We all know what's possible there. But I do think that there might be need to be some, assurances from the administration that there would be no compromise when it comes to trying to compete with Nick Saban in Alabama. And for that matter, Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M right now, because those are your two biggest challengers right now when it comes to getting back to that spot where you're maybe number two in the West every year, but every 2 or 3 years, you got a chance to finish number one. That's where LSU should be.
Talking to Brendan Marcello, a lot of criticism is being leveled at Dan Mullen, and for obvious reasons. Seems a little premature to hear some of this stuff, but Brandon, with a little bit of distance, what are you seeing and hearing about his situation?
Well, I think that what makes Dan Mullen such an interesting character just when it comes to being a coach on the national scene is that, and I saw it up close in Mississippi State when I covered him there, he can seem arrogant at times. He's set in his ways in a lot of ways, but sometimes you can be arrogant and be the smartest person in the room without really showing that to people. You don't have to tell people that. And Dan Mullen tends to tell people that even when he doesn't realize it. And how does he do that? In these press conferences or even booster club circuits where he pretty much tells you, you're stupid for asking that question. I'm going to do what I want to do at quarterback. We'll see. That's fine and well when you're winning 9-10 games a year at Mississippi State. It's fine at Florida earlier in your tenure, especially when you're winning double-digit games every year. But now he's seeing three losses on his schedule already. You've lost to LSU for a second straight year, an undermanned LSU team, not just necessarily a bad one, but an undermanned one that you should beat 9 times out of 10. Shouldn't lose to them 2 straight. So you add all that up, and people get sick of it, and then they start wondering, like, how do we get rid of this guy? Well, Florida's not going to get rid of him. They shouldn't get rid of him right now. But I would think that at this point, he would try to tone down the little bit of the arrogance, so to speak. And I always have to preface all my comments about Dan Mullen with this. It makes it sound like I don't like him. I love Dan Mullen. I think he's the top offensive coach in the country. Beats Lane Kiffin, in my opinion. All the hot names you see out there. Dan Mullen is the best. He's the best quarterback developer, the best game day offensive coach. You saw that against Alabama earlier this season. But he's very inconsistent week to week as well. That's what buries him in some of these situations you go into a year where there's such high expectations. He's just always a loss or two potentially there that you're not quite expecting, but it's almost like you should expect it because Dan Mullen, he's so inconsistent. So the best way he needs to be handling this situation right now is admit when he does have faults, because he does have faults, but he doesn't like to admit it. He just wants to be the smartest person in the room and let you know he is. Whatever you have to say doesn't matter to him. And the way he's handling everything right now is the exact opposite of the way he should be handling it at Florida. There's a much brighter spotlight than it was at Mississippi State. And this isn't a job where if you win 8 games, it sets well. He can win 8 this year and he'll be fine. He'll be fine. But win 8 games of back-to-back seasons, then you're in trouble.
Brandon, your old beat, Auburn, has maybe the quietest coach in the SEC, at least publicly. I've heard stories to the contrary in the locker room. But what do you make out of the job that Brian Harsin has done so far?
You know, I covered the Auburn-Arkansas game this weekend because I really wanted to see – this was a kind of an inflection point for both programs in this part of the season. And – to me, Auburn just answered the bell for almost from start to finish. I love the way that Harsin has kind of instilled his blue-collar philosophy into the team. And it seems to me these last 2 weeks, including the Georgia game, I know they lost by 3-plus touchdowns that game, but doesn't it seem that they were gelling a little bit better offensively? They weren't shooting themselves in the foot. They were believing in the system. Well, against Arkansas, it all came together. I mean, Bo Nix, that was by far, I think, the best game he's ever played in an SEC game. I know people kind of point statistically like at LSU last year at home, but to me, this was the best in-game performance from top to bottom by him. He made the right decisions. He made the great throws. And that offense and offensive line protected him so well. And the drive that kind of summed everything up to me was their final scoring drive against Arkansas. They had the ball for six-plus minutes. They converted third downs when they needed to. When they needed Bo Nix to make big plays, they did. And when Bo Nix realized a play was broken, he was patient with it and then would take off running when he saw the moment to do so. He didn't scramble immediately like he does sometimes to try to create magic, that Bo magic as we kind of see these last few weeks. He was patient, and he made a great, great play there at the end to score on a touchdown run. So to me, that performance by Bo Nix and that offense typifies what Brian Harsin wants. He loves to throw the tight end. He loves to pound the ball when he has to late in the game. He likes to slow things down when he has to, but he wants to dominate the trenches and be able to say, I can go fast, I can go slow, I can go in between, but you're going to play against me the way I want. I dictate the rules. And against Arkansas, they did that. And I think for Auburn fans looking forward this season, if you're sitting at the end of this season with 9 wins potentially, or you even got an upset potentially brewing in the Iron Bowl at Jordan-Hare Stadium, look back to that Arkansas game, because I think that's when things finally started to click for this program.
Brandon, one more thing, because we've had some conflicting stories on what happened Saturday night in Knoxville. And I realize inside the stadium is a different view than what most of us saw on television. But how did you see it from your perch?
Well, you know, at first it's kind of like, oh, this is an interesting scene and somewhat almost funny. But then it starts getting more dangerous the more we saw it, and it just kept continuing. I wanted to see the SEC get a handle on that quickly from the Birmingham office down through the press box, down to the stands, and try to figure out exactly what to do in that situation. This is a big learning moment for the SEC and, for that matter, for the country on how to handle a situation like this. Where do you put the players? Should they go inside the locker room immediately, or is that going to welcome more trouble? Do you get them all go to the midfield to try to figure that out? But one of the deep root issue in this, and not a lot of people are talking about it, other than the fans are talking about this, and I've been criticized for this by people, you know, in power, that the issue here is that fans, and the SEC particularly, are sick of the officials and the inconsistency from them. Now, that last call, the review, whether Tennessee got a first down or not, they made the right call in the end. But that was one of several calls in that game where Tennessee fans were just kind of like, here we go again. And that was the same crew that has had mistakes previously this season. We're in an era now where you can follow referees and umpires, back judges from week to week, and you start to see a trend with them, whether they're missing calls or getting calls incorrect, or they're a great crew. And that crew, led by the head guy, he was on the crew that was part of that Memphis, Mississippi State fiasco. And so Tennessee fans are smart. They see that. Now, should they be throwing things on the field? Heck no. You're putting everybody's safety in threat. And those people who did throw things, I hope they are banned for life from attending any sporting event at Tennessee. But we need to be reflective here. We need to see, why did Tennessee fans react this way? If the Tennessee fans didn't react this way, it was going to be another SEC fan base at some point in the future, whether it's this year, 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road. The SEC needs to look at everything and the way they handle officiating right now and see, how do we fix it? What are we doing incorrectly? What are we doing right? What needs to get better? And take this from all sides. Don't just see this as a fan problem and we'll just handle things and not be very transparent with the officials right now. And that's another thing for me as a reporter. When there is a bad just miscommunication by the referees or whatever, I don't want to wait 2 or 3 hours for the SEC to send me out a canned statement saying we got it wrong. The head official of that crew, which has to report to the SEC and could potentially be suspended or fired, they need to be made available to the media afterward and answer questions. And I've heard all kinds of excuses about why they can't talk. They got to catch a flight. They got to do this. That's just not how we do things. Well, guess what? It's 2021. You're putting kids out on the podium after they throw a game-clinching interception, the worst moment of their life. We're putting them on stage, and they're having to ask questions from morons like me or whatever. But we're not going to let a grown man, 45 years old, who made the biggest wrong call in college football that season, talk to the media and he's getting paid for it, that's an issue with me. And then there's a lot of other things with here. The SEC makes a lot of money. It's the best conference in the country, in my opinion, the way they handle things. I'm not really knocking anybody in this, but it's time to see how we handle these officials. Should we make them full-time? Should that be their full-time gig? We're only hiring full-time referees. You're going to be stationed in Birmingham even. You're going to be going to all these classes, all these clinics, and you're going to be on our payroll. We're not going to do this as a part-time thing where you fly into a town, you fly out right after. There's got to be some transparency with it, with the assignments, with the answers they provide to the media, and then also there needs to be some consistency from the office. There's got to be a different way of doing this. They can do it. They have the money to do it. They can get the type of referees that go in there and make this more transparent so that if they do screw up, fans will at least feel like they have something to answer for in the immediate wake of that.
Brandon Marcello. Thank you, Brandon. Always great to have you on the air. We will take a break. More to come, much more to come, including John Calipari later in the program. We are back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome back, and let's check in with AJ, who is up next. Good afternoon, AJ.
Hello, Mr. Paul Feinbaum. This is AJ from South Carolina, Gamecocker, who at the beginning of the season, I called and asked you if Ed Orgeron was on your hit list. Well, I want to congratulate you on that, because you did good. I want to put a challenge out for you. I'd like for you to try to get this coach who thinks he's the best in the country out of, if you would, get him fired. Do you think you could take that challenge on for me?
I don't know, but I'm curious who you want fired.
Hey, Joe Biden.
Joe Biden?
Mr. Paul Feinbaum, I would like for you to be the next president of the United States. Would you accept this nomination under all parties?
I would not. I do not want to. I've been to the White House, and I don't want to live there.
We don't want you to live there. We just want you to run the country. I hey, the Constitution says if you can, you're supposed to. And you could.
Well, I'm certainly constitutionally sound, but I don't think I really want that job. You actually have to sit around and listen to people all day and – and you don't have a button where you can hang up on them like I do here.
Yeah, that would be, I understand that, but boy, I wish. I do agree with the Georgia guy, to get the Herschel on, it'd be nice.
Well, let me say this about Herschel. I have known Herschel forever, and we've always had a good relationship and a good friendship. And I talked to him, about a year ago off the air. The problem now, in full disclosure, because he is now an announced candidate, it makes it more difficult to bring him on because then you open yourself up. I'm not saying we've never had candidates before, but if it was up to me, I would sit down and talk to Herschel any day of the week about football because he is a fantastic subject, and we've had some memorable conversations in the past. I'm just not sure from a political standpoint, I'm going to be allowed to do that.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, but yeah, I remember a couple conversations with him. Well, one of them anyways, with Herschel, but he was a good man. He is a good man.
He got a big kick one time. I told him a story about sitting with Bo Jackson at Auburn and telling Bo Jackson that I thought Herschel Walker was the best running back I've ever seen, and Bo did not like that, and he said he grabbed his belt live on our set on SEC Nation and acted like he was acting like he was going to hit me, but you know what? I wouldn't have put it past him. So we had a good time. Bo has not announced he's running for any public office, so maybe we'll talk to him about it. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.